It's Friday on Daily Delivery. I am Michael Rand. Hope you guys are having a great day out there, digging out a little bit if you live in Minnesota. Finally got some snow. It is March. It's still not technically winter, but we get a lot of snow in March in general. This isn't that strange. We're going to get more over the weekend. Probably a little bit of payback for how easy, how snow-free most of this winter has been. We'll deal with it. We will be just fine. And it's actually kind of, it's okay. I kind of like it. As long as it's not here for too long, we'll be fine. Good show coming up. Phil Miller from the Star Tribune joins me here in just a little bit. I had his co-beat writer, Bobby Nightingale, on this time last week. It was like, oh, what a boring spring it's been. It is not boring anymore. A lot of injury scares, a lot of updates for the Twins. Phil and I will get into all of that here in just a few minutes and build a lot of our conversation around pitching depth and where that sits right now for the Twins with some of these reliever injuries and also the injury to Anthony DeSclafani, who had been penciled into the number 5 spot in the rotation. I also disappeared down a Vikings draft rabbit hole again. I got to stop doing this. The draft is more than a month away, but I think this is interesting, kind of looking at what it would take for the Vikings to do various trade-up scenarios. Found something in CBSSports.com, a good piece there. So I want to share some of those findings with you in a little bit and encourage you to also go listen to the Access Vikings podcast that we recorded yesterday. Good stuff with Andrew Kramer, Ben Gessling, and myself talking about quarterbacks, the rest of free agency, everything about the Vikings to date so far, and a very interesting offseason it has been. First, though, what did I miss? Let's talk a little NCAA men's basketball tournament. Having a hard time before the tournament started getting into the tournament. This is kind of how it's been for me the past several years. I'm just not a huge college basketball fan. I love pro basketball, love the NBA, I follow every major sport to a degree. That's part of my job, and it's also part of what I love. But college basketball, men's college basketball, is pretty far down on my list in general. You know, probably 7th, 8th at least on my list in terms of things that I will pay attention to in a big way. So when it gets to tournament time, I try to switch my brain on to tournament mode, and it just doesn't happen right away. It takes something to get me into it. Two things caught my eye. One, just a simple performance from Thursday as the tournament opened, and one, kind of an interesting storyline that I wanted to share with you, something I found a little bit amusing. The storyline, though, is Oakland knocking off Kentucky, 3 seed, falling to a 14 seed. And this player for Oakland, Jack Golke, reigning three-pointers, 10 three-pointers. I love this story. Looking at Jack Golke, he looks like a guy who's like maybe in his late 20s. He's not quite that old, but he looks like a 7-year NBA veteran, the kind of guy that comes off the bench as your 8th man in the NBA and just absolutely kills you with a bunch of threes. But no, he's still a college player. Spent the first 5 years of his career, including a redshirt year, at Division II Hillsdale College. Good player there. Decided to transfer to Oakland for his final year of eligibility. Play out a year, you know, in Division I. Ends up getting to the NCAA tournament. They get to play Kentucky in the opener, right? Kentucky's got all this talent. Bunch of one-and-done guys. John Calipari recruiting a bunch of guys who've got NBA talent. They knock them off 80-76. And I love the post-game quotes from Golke saying, obviously, we come in, we're the underdogs by all measures, but as a player, you can't think that way. You've got to go out there and think you have the same talent level as them. I know they have draft picks, and I know I'm not going to the NBA, but I know on any given night I can compete with those guys, and our team can. That's why I say we're not a Cinderella, because when we play our A game, we can be the best team on the floor. I love that mentality. I just really enjoying his story. Like, they caught up with his parents. They had a lot of fun stuff to say. I'm reading from the ESPN story, his mom, Lisa, talking about trying to loosen him up before the tournament. She said, we kept saying, just have fun, take it all in. And he said, I'm not here to have fun. We're here to win. This is a business trip. So I don't know. I really like this story. This is one of the stories that's helping me get into the tournament. There's stories like this every year, right? Don't call them a Cinderella if you don't want to. If they don't want you to, that's fine. But a team that upsets a team, somebody you didn't know about 24 hours before, unless you're the diehard of all diehards, someone who, you know, just came out of nowhere, who didn't know when he woke up that day that he was going to be the story of the day. That's the fun part about the tournament. That's what I can get into if I'm given the chance, if I allow myself to have that chance. Oakland over Kentucky, Jack Golke, that was the story for me on Thursday, and hopefully many more of those to come. Now, adjacent to that was the other thing I want to mention. Mark Few, the Gonzaga coach, was not happy that they kept showing the Oakland-Kentucky game on the big screen, on the big video board, while Gonzaga was beating McNeese State on Thursday night. Few even had to take it up with tournament officials courtside to get it taken off the TV. He was mad. He was saying, quote, "These kids are involved. It's the biggest game of their lives. These officials, you know, it's a big moment. Everyone needs to enjoy the game at hand. It doesn't need to be like the Few house where we're flipping channels every 15 seconds and not watching the show we're supposed to be watching." Now, the fans booed when they turned the game off. There was like, "Here we go, Oakland chants." Everybody wanted Kentucky to lose. Few said, "I mean, I really think that needs to change. It's impacting the game. The McNeese people were here to watch McNeese. Gonzaga people were there to watch Gonzaga. It's the NCAA tournament. If you can't get entertained, then get out and let someone else in your seat. Plain and simple." I don't know. Part of this is like old man yells at cloud meme, right? Like Mark Few is just getting upset that they're, you know, they're not paying attention to the game at hand, that this short attention span generation is saying, "Hey, give us the other game on the TV too while this game is going on the court." And I get that. Part of me, though, is just kind of like, hey, the will of the people should also play into this. If this is a great upset happening and this game on the court is kind of a blowout, then why not show it? I don't know. It was just amusing to me that he got so upset about it. But also, like, I get it. That would probably bother me if I was trying to play a game and the fans in the stands are cheering for other things that aren't happening in my game, disrupting the flow of my game. More of a commentary on 2024 sports, how we expect to be entertained every second of the way instead of just taking a pause and maybe catching up to the final score or catching up to the highlights later. Why can't we have it all right now? Maybe that's what Mark Few is saying. I get it. That's not really, you know, how I came up with sports. You kind of watch one thing at a time. But that was an interesting slice of how things are being watched in 2024. And of course, Gonzaga did win, didn't impact the game, didn't impact their ability to win. But that was fun for me in that game as well. And it's not the NCAA tournament, but the Gophers get to play in the second round of the men's NIT by virtue of that 73-72 win Tuesday at Butler. They now play Indiana State, the number one overall seed in the NIT. Indiana State 29-6. A lot of people thought they got snubbed. They were the Missouri Valley regular season champion. Didn't get into the NCAA tournament when they got upset in their conference tournament. 1 p.m. Sunday, ESPN2. That's worth watching. I think, you know, Gophers, again, the season, didn't know what was going to be expected when the season began, got into the NCAA tournament conversation for a while, slumped at the end of the year, settled for maybe a somewhat surprising bid into the NIT. But, you know, now that they've won that game, they win this one, they're in the quarterfinals. They're getting closer to, you know, playing for something that means more than just extending their season. So check that one out Sunday. Wanted to mention that before we moved on, because that is something that's, you know, going to come before the next show here on Monday.
MGM Wine and Spirits is the choice for savings, service, and a great selection of spirits, pre-mixed cocktails, wines, and of course, ice-cold beers and hard seltzers. With over 30 locations throughout the Twin Cities and beyond, there's an MGM near you. Head to mgmwineandspirits.com to find a convenient location in your area. Get social. Follow MGM on Facebook and Instagram for all the latest news and trends. Make great moments with MGM Wine and Spirits, your locally owned and operated choice for over 50 years. Save time, save money. Shop MGM.
Let's talk Twins with Phil Miller from the Star Tribune. Phil, this time last week, I had our colleague, your co-beat writer, Bobby Nightingale, on, and he was like, "Hey, smooth sailing. It's been the most boring camp. Everybody I talked to says nothing. Couldn't have been a more paint-by-numbers camp." And he wasn't wrong. And then, like, 3 days later, they were, you know, we got all these updates. Duran is on the shelf. DeSclafani probably out for the season. Caleb Thielbar is going to start the year on the disabled list and the injured list. You got, I think Buxton was scratched that day, although that wasn't a big deal. A lot of news since then, Phil.
Yeah, and none of it good news in particular. It's funny, the further into camp you go without a major injury, the less and less anyone wants to talk about it, because Superstition is strong in training camps, but all the news is they're one of their starting pitchers is out and probably for the year. Their closer is out, probably only for a month, but that raises a certain panic in Twins fandom. So it remains a non-newsy camp, except for the injuries now, which I suppose we would rather it just be boring.
You don't want a pitcher to have an oblique injury, which is what Duran's injury is being described as. However, if you are going to have an injury as a pitcher, I guess that's better than elbow or shoulder or something where you're worried about it, you know, healing and affecting his ability to, you know, stay healthy with the arm for the year. So I guess if there's a sliver of good news in that, as soon as people found out that Duran was potentially hurt, I'm sure they were worried about what it is. This feels like, you know, he'll heal from it and he'll be okay. And it's not like he can't be himself again.
It's funny. I was working on a story about how does somebody throw 104 miles an hour? How is it possible? And talked to a lot of the Twins pitching analysts, and a couple of them told me that part of the reason is his plant foot. When he hits the ground, he hits the ground with more force than anyone on the team and maybe anyone in baseball. It's just part of how he throws, and it's something that you would not normally, that you don't notice without the advanced mechanic, the advanced analytical stuff that they use. So he hurt the oblique just while warming up. And so the next day I saw one of those analysts and I said, is that from the plant foot? And he said, yeah, probably. It's never happened before, but when he turns and throws, his front leg hits the ground very hard relative to most other pitchers, and they think that probably is what happened.
Theo Bar also will start the year on the injured list. He's got that hamstring issue. Again, not an arm problem, but you're talking about two of their four most important relief pitchers. They'll be without to start the year. I would say that's pretty true, especially Theo Bar. I mean, we know Theo Bar is their most trusted lefty. How do they, A, just flat out replace those two arms? That suddenly becomes a little bit more of a competition. And B, how do you replace late leveraged innings, especially in the early going with those guys out?
Well, you kind of count on Brock Stewart and Griffin Jacks being as good as they have looked this spring. They have both impressed the pitching coaches with how poised they look, how ready they look. Both of them came in already physically ready to go, and they have Jacks, I don't believe, has given up a run all spring. So you have to trust those guys. Theo Bar is a little trickier because, you know, it's a team that definitely relies on matchups and left right. And they acquired Steven Okert from the Marlins in the Nick Gordon trade, which looked like just a minor thing. And, you know, suddenly he gets, you know, he'll probably get some late inning chances against left-handers. It opens the door for Cody Funderburk to probably make the team. He will be the back of the front of the bullpen left-hander. I would imagine Okert will get the first shot at those. You try to muddle through as best you can. Rocco always says that he doesn't consider Duran the ninth inning guy. He considers them the important hitter guy. And so it's probably a bigger loss than just saying the closer went down.
The temptation could have been, and they probably would have resisted this anyway, but the temptation could have been to say, hey, we just lost two relievers. There's a guy who throws 98, 99 when he's in the bullpen, Louis Varland, but they need Louis to start now because no DeSclafani, likely for the year. This is a guy they got in the Jorge Polanco trade and, you know, knew there was an injury risk there. They talked about that from the get-go. He was shut down for 2 months at the end of last year. He's been shut down three times altogether, just trying to get that thing right, and it sounds like it's probably going to need surgery. He wasn't necessarily the centerpiece of that deal. Might have been kind of low on the spectrum, but that was really the only thing they did this offseason, Phil, to bolster their starting rotation, and they certainly had two key departures with Sonny Gray and Kenta Maeda. How do you feel about their pitching depth now that this has happened, and what are they, you know, what do they do with their starting five? It looks like Louis Varland is the fifth, although he had been perfect in camp and gave up, what, 8 runs in his first game since the injury. So that was another sliver of not so great news in the last week.
Yeah, it is potentially a big problem. And I think that there was some concern that it could turn out to be. I am surprised that they weren't more forceful about bringing in a veteran, some veteran that they can stick in there if they need to. You're right. I think the temptation especially on Rocco's staff was to send Louis to the bullpen, but they can't. DeSclafani was in no way the centerpiece of that trade.
Right.
They couldn't say it, in out loud, but he was essentially thrown into the trade to make the money work, to make the salaries work. So they were hoping that he had something left and that he had recovered. I don't think it's a huge surprise that it has not worked out. He has not yet seen the surgeon, the doctor, that will take place early next week. So, but I think there's not much optimism that he'll be back. For one thing, he's a free agent at the end of the year. Do you want to muddle through? Maybe you're hurt, maybe you're not, and go into free agency? Or do you want to tell teams that you're on the mend and you are going to be 100% when you get back? So, it is a problem. They have a few options at AAA, but none of them I think they feel are especially ready. It occurred to me, and I think there's been some talk around camp that maybe there might be a trade. Teams start to put guys on waivers now as cuts come. It's kind of a scrap heap kind of approach. They don't need a fifth starter in the first couple of weeks. So that's another reason why I kind of thought they might ask Louis to work in the pen. But it's pretty clear that that they want him built up and ready to go, because now they need him in the rotation more than ever.
If, like, say, let's say they get a pitcher that's got, you know, a blister problem, anything where he's got to miss, not even a major injury. Let's say he misses 2 or 3 starts. Like, who is the next pitcher up now, even in the on the team? We knew Varland was kind of the backstop, the sixth guy. Who's now the next guy up?
Cole Sands, who might make the team, but as the long reliever, but he could spot start. They have Randy Dobnak in AAA that looked okay, although he was cut rather quickly in camp. Their top pitching prospect is now at AAA, David Festa, but he's only, I think he's only thrown 3 games in AAA, so I don't think they want to push him. They haven't lost Dallas Keuchel's phone number,
okay,
I don't think.
Yeah, right.
It's slim thick pickings there.
Woods Richardson, is he in that mix, or is he?
He is, although I think that they're not certain about. They want to see a little more from him. I don't think he I don't think he impressed in camp as much as some of the others. So, he has started a couple of games, but you are not looking at a Bailey Ober like they had last year, or a Louis Varlin like they thought they would have this year, a number six starter who actually was probably one of the five best. It makes me wonder if there's will be somebody pop up on the waiver wire in the next week that suddenly gets added.
Yeah, if you can't answer that question, that means they probably can't answer that question definitively, at least. And again, you don't need one for the first couple weeks. Maybe you kind of muddle through. Maybe there's good health with your five. I do think, even if they don't add somebody now, they've got to be thinking at least big picture about, maybe they didn't have the money or the match, that the things didn't match up right for them to essentially replace Sonny Gray at the start of the year. But boy, if they have any sort of postseason aspirations, and again, we got to see how the year plays out, but got to feel like they're at least thinking in the back of their heads, could we get a 1, 2, or 3 before the deadline? What's that going to cost? Because I know I'm getting way ahead of myself. I know, but they broke this postseason streak. You don't want to go right back to another losing streak. It just feels like pitching depth and pitching quality could be far diminished from last year, shall we say?
Could be. They are looking for some development, some improvement. Yep. In the AAA, in the AAA guys, a Brent Hedrick, a left-handed starter. It would be nice if he developed into at least a middle of the rotation guy. You're right about it. It's going to be an ongoing problem. I have joked with Derek Falvey several times. Has he heard anything about Jordan Montgomery? This is about the time when you get those phone calls saying we need, we have an emergency situation. We need a roster spot for him. But it hasn't happened. And the last time I talked to Derek Falvey, he said, talking about Snell and Montgomery still out there, you're looking at least a month before you can trust them to put on the mound. They have undoubtedly been throwing regularly, but there's more to it than just throwing at a camp. So I know they have Scott Boris's phone number, but I don't know that they would spend the money for a pillow contract like he's gotten. And I don't, their experience with guys coming into camp late, the Lance Lynn's of the world, is not a good one. And I think they would be leery.
Snell got his deal, right? He's got the 1-year deal with the Giants, but Montgomery's still out there, and it's a weird market. There's good pitchers out there. I don't think that's where it's going, but yeah, you could imagine July, people might start getting antsy. Twins are sitting there, maybe 2 or 3 games up in a bad division. You're like, okay, where is this thing headed? Again, getting ahead of ourselves. Maybe the solutions are on the staff already. Maybe the call is coming from inside the house. We will see. Switching gears a little bit, we were talking about this before we started recording, but maybe a little bit of a surprise. Trevor Larnach already sent down signaling, hey, Matt Wallner, this is your job, even though Matt Wallner has not had a good spring.
No, and it's funny. I think a lot of us imagined that they were kind of sort of competing. There's probably only one spot for a left-handed outfielder besides Kepler, and would they be duking it out in spring training? Well, Matt Wallner, I believe, has 2 hits all spring. He's batting about 0-6-0. And has admitted that he's pressing that as it gets later. He said he's generally a slow starter, but he said this is worse. This is it's got to come around soon because he's working as hard as he can. But it was Larnach that got sent down, even though he was hitting 240, 250, something like that. And I've never heard a team publicly admit this, but the Twins basically said they sent down Larnach to reassure Wallner that he's got a spot on the team, that he is, that he's going to make the team. So if you're pressing because of the competition, he's up, relax. We want you here. I wonder how long they can actually go like that if he doesn't start hitting once the season starts. But I have never heard of a team send down the competition just to who's hitting better, just to reassure, especially a second-year player. I mean, it's not like Walner is Carlos Correa and you are fairly confident he'll come around.
Well, no, and, you know, something to consider after this, and this is a small sample size, but, you know, if he's pressing right now in the spring to win a job in March, that doesn't really bode well for September, October, and I don't believe he had a great – he was a rookie last year, limited sample size. I think looking up right quickly right now, he was 0 for 8 with 5 strikeouts in the playoffs last year. I think they should believe in Matt Wallner. I think he's going to have, he can be a good player for them, but strange to take the pressure off someone in March. Maybe that's a time to find out if they can handle the pressure, not to take the pressure off of him.
Yeah. By all accounts, and I have watched some of his batting practices. He's working with, and he's working behind the scenes with the hitting coaches every day. He's working very hard. He's hitting them a mile in BP. They're line drives into the gap and over the wall. He just hasn't been able yet to translate that into the game. He seems confident. I think when you talk to him, although he admits that he is a little mystified by the results he's gotten, it is an extreme amount of patience for a team that would seem to have options. And, you know, the flip side of that too is, what does that say for Trevor Larnach's career with the Twins? If he can't make the team when his competition, what we thought was his competition, has 2 hits.
Yeah. I mean, I think at this point in Larnach's career, I think they probably feel like they know what he is, and they probably need to learn a little bit more about what Walner is, probably a higher ceiling, but Walter maybe has a lower floor. But that is interesting. Final thought, Phil. We didn't touch on any of the biggest of the big offensive names, at least Royce Lewis, Byron Buxton, Carlos Correa, you know, even like throwing an Edward Julian, guys that are probably top of the order hitters. Like, that all seems like it's okay. But just in general, like the Walner conversation is everything. Like, their record's not very good. Some of these guys are underperforming. Like, they don't put a ton of stock in spring performance, I'm sure spring record, but you still would prefer to have better numbers, better everything at this point in the spring if you fancy yourself a contender with a lot of good players, I would think.
Yeah, their numbers aren't very good, and it's almost all on the hitting side. They have been pretty pleased with how the pitching has gone, Louis' start aside, but I think they feel really good about how their pitching staff, the front of the pitching staff, maybe not the depth, looks. But yeah, the hitting has been awfully sporadic. Their best hitters this spring have been Willie Castro and Eddie Julian. Byron Buxton was hot for a little while. They're having trouble scoring runs, I can attest that it's noticeable when you watch all these spring games. There are a lot of fast half innings, you have to trust that these guys know what they're doing, that they're just getting their 3 at bats in and trying to prepare. From about an hour and a half from when we record this, we'll be 1 week out from opening day. So yeah. It's time to ramp it up, and they know that. And I wish I could reassure you that it will all fall into place next week. But they're having a hard time, especially against the starting pitching that they faced. They get Spencer Strider again tomorrow with the Braves, and he shut him out twice already.
Well, We'll see how it all goes. Maybe we'll catch up in advance of the season next week. But at least until then, Phil, enjoy the rest of Florida. We'll see you. Maybe hope for a quieter week for you and Bobby. And we'll talk again soon.
Okay, Mike. Good talking to you.
Royal Credit Union's smart checking accounts offer no monthly fees and no minimum balance. Enjoy financial freedom when you open your Royal Credit Union smart checking account online at rcu.org/gochecking. Insured by NCUA.
Good stuff from Phil, and almost right on cue. While we were talking, or the day we were talking, there was even more injury scares on Thursday. Max Kepler had been scratched from Wednesday's game with pec tightness. He had an MRI. Seems like everything is okay there. Jorge Alcala had exited Wednesday's game after taking a ground ball off of his fingertip. Sounds like he's okay. No fractures there. But Brooks Lee, their top prospect, one of their top prospects, exited Thursday's game with back spasms. Got to look at that. So injury stuff kind of piling up. Twins lost again, a walk-off loss to the Nationals. Again, you don't put too much emphasis on results in spring training, but the Twins now are 8-16-3 in spring training. Again, the three being ties, so throw those out. That's not going to happen in the regular season, but 8-16-3. Again, they're looking at a lot of different guys. They're not playing their A lineup, their A pitchers all the time, but you would still love that to be a little bit better, especially with the season less than a week away now. So we'll see where they finally land once the real games begin next week. Let's finish with the cooler. Like I said at the beginning, fell down a bit of a rabbit hole, found this piece at CBSSports.com. They kind of have their own value chart. RJ White writing about this at CBS Sports. I just found it interesting. He charted the Vikings, took a look at what it would cost using his own charting to move up anywhere from 2 to 5 in the draft now. And then 2 seems unlikely. Washington seems pretty locked on to that spot. But just for the sake of argument, he went 2 through 5, and it really underscored the difference in value in those picks, especially according to his chart. Like moving up just to 3, as we've talked about before, will cost the Vikings quite a bit, would cost them almost certainly next year's first round pick, you know, in addition to the number 11 and number 23 picks that they've already amassed this year. That 23 pick coming to them in a trade with the Texans, the number 11 pick their own, almost certainly going to have to trade a future first, maybe get something back in exchange for that based on the value, maybe get like a second or maybe get a third round pick this year back in that scenario. But almost certainly giving up next year's first round pick in addition to these 2 first round picks to move up to number 3. Now, if all they have to do, quote, all they have to do is move up to number 4, it gets a lot more palatable, according to his chart. It does not involve probably giving up a future first, or if it does, it involves them getting back quite a bit of other value, maybe a second and a third in addition to moving up to number 4. So the difference between 3 and 4 is pretty huge. And the difference between 4 and 5 is also pretty huge. Probably just in his trade scenario, probably just means, you know, at the baseline, kind of giving up the 2 picks they already have to move up to number 5. And that, if they're moving up to 5, that probably means they're targeting JJ McCarthy, right? That means that Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, and Drake May have gone with the first 3 picks. Nobody has jumped into number 4. Arizona probably takes Marvin Harrison Jr. at that spot, and then the Vikings swap with the Chargers, who don't need a quarterback, give up 11 and 23 to move up to number 5. That's kind of their baseline value right there. They're giving up a little bit of value in that scenario, but they get their quarterback, presumably McCarthy, in that scenario. Now, he also outlines the possibility of 2 more trades, Vikings making a swap with the Chargers to get to 5, and then potentially using that 5 pick to get to 3 with New England, instead of having kind of the one step to get to New England if New England doesn't want to go down that far. So again, all of this is going to play out. I don't think this is going to happen until maybe draft night, unless the Vikings have kind of that intermediate move. But just watching and seeing the relative value of these picks, especially according to kind of what played out over the years, was interesting. Also interesting was kind of a reminder of the cautionary tale of believing in a big quarterback draft class. You know, we talked a lot about the big trades that happened in 2021, especially the 49ers moving up the board from 12 to 3 to get Trey Lance. He said the 2024 class is more in line with 2021 than 2018. Another strong quarterback class on the surface, with one standout at the top, and then questions about the order thereafter. That year, the standout at the top was Trevor Lawrence, who I think we'd say still has some work to do, but has shown himself to be a good NFL quarterback at this point. But the quarterbacks after that, the ones, you know, Vikings aren't going to be able to touch the Trevor Lawrence of this draft, Caleb Williams. But after that, the four quarterbacks who are kind of thought of highly in that draft and were picked high, Zach Wilson, Justin Fields, Trey Lance, and Mac Jones. None of those guys have panned out. Zach Wilson, you know, was benched in New York. Justin Fields didn't work out in Chicago, got traded. Trey Lance traded to, you know, has been traded. Mac Jones just got traded. Like, that is a cautionary tale when we think of Drake May, Jaden Daniels, and J.J. McCarthy. And again, you never know, right? It's apples and oranges to a certain degree. But just remember that as highly as we think about these classes, and we made this point on Access Vikings yesterday as well, as highly touted as these classes can be, sometimes things just don't work out with these quarterbacks. It is still a crapshoot, even if people think highly of these players. So just think about that. Even think about 2018. Like, Sam Darnold was the number three pick by the Jets. He's now the bridge quarterback for the Vikings 6 years later after, you know, not finding the success you thought he would have. So a lot of this is going to be playing out over the next year or two, and certainly over the next month, to see what the Vikings do. But in terms of, like, finding out if this quarterback, whoever they take, assuming they can take a quarterback, finding out if they can play is a long process and not always a smooth one. That will do it for me today. Expecting to have Patrick Royce on with me as on Monday as usual. Probably doing a special Twins episode too next week, a special delivery previewing the Twins season. That'll probably be middle of next week as we get ready for the start of the year. So listen for that in addition to other things. Until then, I am Michael Rand, back at it again on Monday.